Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're going to talk now about a subject nearly everyone has a theory about: birth order. And before you roll your eyes too far into the backs of your heads, hear this. We are going to talk about the parental side of things today, how moms and dads perceive their children, what effect that might have, and how we can all be better parents to our children, no matter what order they come in. Two researchers explored the issue of parental perception in the new study entitled Strategic Parenting, Birth Order, and School Performance. And joining us now is the study's co-author, Joseph Hutz. He's a professor of economics at Duke University, and he joins us from Durham, North Carolina. Professor Hutz, welcome to Radio Boston.
Well, thank you very much for having me on your show.
So this is a paper that got a lot of conversation going on in our office today, because we've got some firstborns, some lastborns, some middleborns, and everyone, and some onlys even, and everyone's got their own theories about how they ended up and why they ended up where they did. But let me ask you, first of all, when it comes to parental perception, what exactly did you measure on terms of how parents perceive their children?
So we asked parents in the survey what they thought each of their children ranked in their class. So sort of in the top quarter, above the mean to the lower half of the distribution.
So you're looking how parents see the academic ability in their children.
And most importantly, academic performance. How well are they doing in school? So it's a combination of how bright you are, as well as motivation and factors like that.
Okay, so how did parents perceive how their children did, depending on what order they were in?
Well, the pattern was pretty clear, which was that perceptions of students being ranked by their parents in the top half of the class were firstborns. And as you went down to later-born children, right, the ranks of their parents were lower. So there was clearly a pattern to this perceived relationship between student performance and the order of the birth of their children.
So this is interesting, because I should note that you measured perceptions by mothers and not necessarily other parents.
That's right. Only mothers were interviewed in this study, because the original study was sort of only of women. So we were looking at the offspring of these women who were interviewed in a previous study.
I see. So you were constrained by the longitudinal nature of the study. Okay,
exactly.
Got it. Okay,
exactly.
So what significance do you gather from the fact that it seems as if this group of mothers that you talk to perceive, and we're going to talk about this perception thing a little bit more, but they perceive that their firstborns have better academic performance than subsequent children.
So I want to make an observation here, which is that while there is an important aspect of sort of perception, which may deviate from what actually, sort of some more objective measures. Indeed, in this case, what we did do is look at how do parents' perceptions of their children by birth order compare with part of the study was a supplemental school survey, which gathered the grade point average of the students. These are mostly students in middle school. Their ages 10 to 14. And to be clear, right, the parents' perceptions are highly correlated with of where their kids stand, or highly correlated with what their GPAs are. So it's not that perceptions are kind of wildly at variance with what some more, if you will, objective measures of school performance are. That said, right, there's still obviously scope for parents having, some perceptions about where their kids rank, which may or may not be, which may be somewhat at variance. They may overstate or understate those differences.
So basically you're saying that there is some correlation between what the mothers seem to think versus how the children are actually performing in school. But I guess what I'm curious about is what effect these perceptions are having on the families or on the children themselves. I mean, did you try and measure that or observe that in any way?
Not a lot. We certainly not in this particular study of what those perceptions were. But what we did see, right, is that parents were responding differently to whether or not a child was doing well in school or ranked, in their view, ranked highly or not. And those differences depended very much on what birth order. So firstborn children in this model, right, in the analysis and in the data, parents perceived to be doing better, and parents were much tougher on when their child, that firstborn child, wasn't doing so well in school, or by their perception, they were much more likely to do things like, you know, withhold privileges, TV, curfews were imposed, and or, you know, closer monitoring of their homework. So if parents perceived the kids weren't doing well, especially for the firstborns, right, they were gonna intervene with various types of restrictions on the child in response to that.
Listeners, I'm speaking with Joseph Hutz. He's a professor of economics at Duke University and a co-author of a new study called Strategic Parenting, Birth Order, and School Performance. And you've been hearing Professor Hutz describe how they have a set of data that seem to show that parents, mothers specifically, perceive the academic performance of their firstborns differently than laterborns. And as we're talking about right now, they may actually treat their firstborns a little differently when it comes to school performance. So what do you make of that? If you're a parent, and you're parent of an only child, or even, you know, more than one child, do you think you treat your children differently when it comes to academic performance? Is there something to this? Or do you think that perhaps this is just another one of those birth order theories who's got more exceptions than rules, because every family is unique? But let me just throw out the number here. It's 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Professor Hutz, you wanted to say something there.
I just want to make the, you know, sort of the observation that, and you know, there are, it's clearly true that there's a whole kind of an industry of measuring birth order effects. A lot of it starts with so-called intelligence test scores and birth order effects, which has been controversial, and it's, you know, the explanations of why that pattern is there is contested by a lot of different theoretical views. But there's a whole other set of, you know, patterns that do seem to follow birth order differences. For example, in work that I've done, dropping out of school, the more extreme form of not doing so well in school has a very marked birth order effect, with the incidence of dropping out of school much lower amongst the firstborns than the secondborns. Amongst young daughters, right? Teenage childbearing is lower amongst the firstborn than it is among subsequent born daughters. Substance abuse, right? We looked in other work I've done, we've looked at incidence of smoking and, you know, reported drug use. And again, there are birth order effects to patterns to that.
Mm-hmm.
Our view is that parents, both respond to that, but they may well respond to differences depending upon, you know, the size of their family. So you made the reference to, an only child versus a family which has, you have at least one sibling. The pattern that we see is very much that we kind of hypothesize what's going on, and the evidence is consistent with, is a view that parents are going to, you know, try to influence their kids' behaviors. Some parents are going to be, you know, they're disciplinarians. If their kid's not performing well in school, or they perceive they're not performing, putting forth the effort that they need to, it doesn't matter what the birth order is. They're going to have, you know, they're going to
be tough.
Try
no
to
change. What.
Yeah, they're going to be tough on their kids. But in other cases, right, if you sort of say, look, for any number of reasons, I mean, parents don't like to have to discipline their kids all the time, or parents get tired of disciplining their kids, right? That what we sort of show is, if you're trying to sort of have an impact on your children, right, you want to start the process early by saying, I'm going to discipline, I'm going to respond if you don't do well in school. I'm going to respond with withholding privileges or closely monitoring your homework. That means that the firstborn child is going to be affected by that.
Well,
and that's what we see in the data.
So that's exactly what I want to ask you about. It's the strategic parenting portion of the the title of your paper. And you seem to say, as you just mentioned, that our parents intentionally, or some parents at least, intentionally imposing these strict rules on the firstborn in order to set a precedent or a template for the rest of the family?
As we refer to it in the paper, they establish a reputation for being, a disciplinarian in responding to that. Look, it may well be that we don't have direct data that says what were parents' intentions. Did they do this in a purposeful way? Did they sit back and sort of think about our theory and say, oh, that's a good theory and we should sort of follow that practice? We don't have data like that, at least not in this study, and most other ones that I've looked at don't have that information. But what we try to piece together here is the pattern pattern of behavior on both the part of the parents and children is very, very systematic. There's one part of the study which parents were asked the following. For each of their children by birth order, they were asked, suppose your child, John, let's suppose John's the oldest child, comes home with a poor report card. How are you going to respond? And the range of responses could be, I'm not going to do anything to, you know, I'm going to more closely monitor their behavior and or restrict their privileges. And a systematic pattern to that, right, in response to that. So they asked if each, a parent mother was asked for each of the children. Again, you find this in this hypothetical question, birth order effects, very pronounced just, you know, don't go away with sort of simple statistical sort of procedures. So there's something about parents doing different things with how they're going to monitor and how they're going to act with children of different birth order.
So so Professor Hutz, just in the spirit of full disclosure, you're speaking to someone who is a parent. I've got one so far. So I'm listening to all of this with open ears. But I also wonder, you know, because parents often try a lot of things that end up backfiring. And I'm wondering if this is one of those cases, because in the very, you know, while they may be, you know, unconsciously trying certain things with the firstborns or the older children in hopes of setting this example, your data seems to show that it's not really working, because at the same time, they perceive perhaps accurately that their later children don't do as well. So that trickle down effect is, if for lack of a better term, doesn't really work.
Well, to the extent to which that's right, the question here really is, right, what would be the alternative, right? If they didn't respond in this particular way, how much worse could it be for students? And that we've done some analysis, tried to get some handle on that, and suggesting that it would be a good deal worse. You raised the question about, you know, sort of what happens in your own situation, whether you have more children or not. I'm not going to enter that debate, but when you have a single child, I mean, there is a question about sort of this kind of idea doesn't work very well, right? You can't influence by example how you treat your oldest child if they're not going to be any more coming along. So the one thing that's sort of interesting about our theory is, you know, it may be its time is past of having a lot of influence to the extent to which you see smaller and smaller family sizes as we go through time, right? I mean, I grew up in a family I had four siblings, three sisters and a brother. I have two sons. And so family sizes have shrunk, and maybe that's had an effect on how people parent. I'm sure it has in ways, and our theory would predict that indeed would have a different pattern, depending upon how many kids you ultimately have.
Well, we've got a lot of callers here who want to provide their two cents in on this conversation, so let's go to some of them. Ellen is calling from Lowell. You're on the air, Ellen.
Hi. I just wanted to tell you I'm interested in what you're saying, that I think my parents were toughest on my oldest brother, that he was told when he was in college his grades weren't good enough, that parents said if your grades don't pick up, the car comes home. And the car came home right after my twin and I turned 16. And I can say that about the being twins, that we're not at all identical. We're fraternal. And the parents rigged it so that we tied for class rank in high school. And then when we graduated from college, I graduated with honors and my sister didn't. And in the Christmas letter, it was the girls graduated.
Ellen, thank you so much for sharing your story, and thank you for the call. Let's go to Jim, who's calling from Quincy. You're on the air, Jim.
Thank you. I'm very interested in the subject. As a parent of three, I would definitely agree that I parented much more rigidly with my first one. But then with the other two, and particularly with reading, I was much more flexible and forgiving, because with the first one, I think I was afraid that if he didn't get it, if he didn't get it early, if he didn't get it well, that he would, you know, be labeled special ed, or he might have a bigger problem, and I was very much on top of everything. With the other two, I kind of was much more organic with it. I feel like it was like, okay, I trusted in the system, I trusted in the schools, I trusted if my wife and I would do it right, and it has. I mean,
Jim, let me ask you, why do you think you were more organic with your younger children? What was the difference? I mean, was it just that you learned a lot the first time around?
Absolutely. I mean, I made many first-time parenting mistakes with my first son, and, you know, I learned from them. I was open to learning from them, and, you know, I was able to reflect on how my parents parented me. I'm the oldest of five. I have three children. I have two boys and a girl. The girl's in the middle. All of those things, and I'm not a big birth order believer, but I do think that it has an, like, you know, as I grew as a parent, my parenting changed.
Right, Jim, it's a great point, Jim, and thank you so much for your call. Professor Joseph Hutz, I wonder if you could respond to that, because there is sort of this truth that with every subsequent child, most parents, at least who are involved deeply in the act of parenting, do learn as they go along.
There's no doubt about that. I mean, and part of the response that we see may well be partially due to you learn a lot from that first kid, raising them, and you learn a lot of things about, you know, I remember, you know, my son holding it, and you think that, you know, the baby's going to break, and pretty soon you learn they're pretty resilient, and we learn a lot of things about, you know, through trial and error in the rest of our lives, and there's nothing different about that with respect to parenting. So for sure, that's part of the process. But keep in mind, there are a lot of other things which change across as parents get older, right? They are greater, you know, there's a greater distance in age. So the things which your firstborn teenage child may like may be quite different than the, you know, might be closer to what you liked as a parent than when you were a kid than your youngest born kids if they're further removed. And things like, you know, the other parts of your life, the, you know, you become, depending upon what your careers are, you become, you know, do you have more time in the early stages with that kid, whereas later you're busy, more responsibilities, and you have less, sort of time available for your kid, or you might, the other side is, right, you may have more resources if people are, you know, doing better as they go through life, they may have different resources. So it's harder to tease out exactly what the source is for this pattern. And we're not suggesting that this is, you know, that our particular, this notion about strategic parenting is the only source of why parents will treat their children differently. Learning certainly can be important. It's only, you know, we're trying to say our suggestion is it's part of the story. And again, in various types of, you know, sort of studies, we've done some stuff trying to look at parental learning in other contexts. And yes, it's there, but so is this kind of strategic response of saying you're going to treat kids differently because you're trying to influence the later born kids.
Well, let me just take one more call here, if I may. Maya Yoon is calling from Brookline. You're on the air.
Mayan.
Oh. You're on the air, Mayan.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. What's your thought?
I have a twin brother, and he and I are the oldest of four. And not unlike the previous caller, we were the children. My brother had a learning issue. He had to go to private school, so I went to private school, and so did my four subsequent children, my two subsequent sisters. I have four children of my own, and of course I learned with each growing child, but what I learned most from was the way I was parented. Mm-hmm. And what I learned was that I need to see each of my children as individuals. I need to see their strengths and their weaknesses. I need to help them understand how they learn. If they need to go to different schools, that's what's going to happen. And that affects their whole self-image, and it's, I think that's the way it has to be. There's an additional factor there of being able to really see and understand each of your children and what they need.
As individuals. Mayan, thank you so much for your call. And on that note, Professor Hutz, I wonder if we could, I just wanted to end with this question to you, because the data that you show, you found and correlate are very interesting. But I wonder if a parent were to ask you, okay, so how is this study, how can it help us do better at parenting? What would you say?
Well, I'm not so sure that I'm in the business and that this study is particularly informative of saying, you know, what's the best parenting practice. I think one of the implications, though, that is important out of the study is parenting matters, right? It does affect performance of kids and responses to whether it's perceived, sort of either good performance or poor performance or actual good performance or poor performance on the part of the kids in school with respect to drugs, et cetera. Kids, I think our results sort of suggest what parents do has an influence. So to the extent to which when you get into this birth order literature, you get oftentimes this view of predetermination, right? Oh, I'm the second born kid, so I'm not going to be nearly as successful as my older sibling. Not true. I mean, you're shaped by a lot of factors, and the one that we're focusing on in this study is how your parents raise you.
Right.
And that matters.
Well, Joseph Hutz is a professor of economics at Duke University and co-author of the new paper, Strategic Parenting, Birth Order, and School Performance. Professor Hutz, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me on.
Listeners, there's much more of the show coming up. Let us know what you think about what you heard in this conversation at RadioBoston.org, but stick with us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.